Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, it's all about disaster movies with our natural disaster movie battle royale. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Danport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing today?
Troy Heinrichs.
We're going to blow you away with this one.
And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Hola. Look at that. Two in a row. Good for you, Amanda. Proud of you.
I told you. Maybe I should have put money on this.
Maybe you should have. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Discord or we're on X at Buy Popcorn. Man, and if you listen to the very end of this episode, you'll probably hear reviews of Twisters and The Beast Within, so that'll be after our topic, but disaster movies, that's what we're going to talk about. Alien disaster movies are not included. We ruled them out. Does that make you sad, Troy?
I mean, kinda. I like Independence Day.
But you realize, like, that's a different genre. I mean, it is a disaster.
It's an invasion. Yeah, it's an invasion. It's not a disaster. They cause disaster, but there's not a disaster movie.
Exactly. And we've got some couple disaster movies that are even debatable if they're disaster movies, according to.
Oh, they're not debatable. They are not disaster movies.
Here we go. Oh, here it. Let's go. Fight.
I gotta deal with Troy slinging so much crap about movies that are someplace, but they aren't really there or don't belong to be there. And yeah, it's my turn.
Really? So you're ready to prove him wrong? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck that guy.
Okay. We don't need to go to that level. All right. Classy.
No, he's fine because he brought this one to the table that he's going to talk about. And I took the time to actually watch it so that I can be well informed.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good. I'm proud of you.
Bring your fight gloves. I might have words for Amanda too. I want hers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I got to admit, I sort of have words for Amanda. I want hers too.
How? Okay. Okay.
Wow.
I'm going to have to defend her because I already know what hers are. And I'm like, what is the problem? Like, really?
Mine certainly qualifies. And guess what? Mine's fucking real. And yes, I muted myself.
But why?
Wow. Through my mouth.
We're editing live now. That's how cool she is because she came out two
episodes
in a row.
Yeah, you're welcome. I saved you editing, Aaron. Accept it. Enjoy it. Appreciate it.
What the hell was that? Oh, I didn't know that was necessary, but all right.
You're welcome.
So first question, Amanda, since you're piping up and maybe you can school these guys, like, what is the overall appeal of disaster movies? Why do people love the idea of stuff going whoosh and blown away?
There's typically one of two reasons, but sometimes you can conjoin them. One, it's realistically terrifying. It's something where it's like, wow, this is something that seems feasible enough to destroy, that could happen to me or could happen to our country or happen to our world. The other ones are the absolutely ludicrous and outrageous, couldn't even fathom the possibility of it happening type ridiculousness of a disaster movie. And so typically it's one of those two. You either really like, I mean, some people enjoy both of them, but I feel like most people fall into one or the other more so.
Okay. You guys agree with her?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is something that could plausibly happen, but it's just friggin' ridiculous. Armageddon, volcano, things of that nature. And then there's the other side of the coin where it's very, very plausible. And we all live through it. Like, outbreak with COVID. So, I mean, it's things that are make you go, well, what would happen? Would society collapse? Would, you know, I have my family? Could I find my family? You know, I think those are the things that are, it's a blueprint or a playbook for when this thing actually does occur, because it very well could.
I could. Yeah. I've always found that a big reason why people love disaster movies is nobody wants to see something else horrible happen to other people's homes and things like that. But it's just that the reason why it's such a visceral feeling is the same reason why slasher movies work for me, right? Is because I like going in the woods. I want to see horrible things happen that on a screen, but I never want them to happen in real life. It's kind of that thing. It's living vicariously through a movie, through a TV show, that kind of thing. It's just seeing how it plays out. And for whatever reason, it gives you a thrill because in those cases, disaster movies, for many of them, they feel like maybe that could happen. Like that might actually happen. What would you do in this scenario? How would you like escape this? How would you survive? And that sort of thing. And you know, if they're done really, really well, which most of the ones we're going to talk about are done really, really well, they really get you. They really get you in the feels. John, why do you like them? Since you have the one movie that we're going to really, really fight over. We haven't gotten there yet.
In some cases, I like the anticipation. I like the build up to everything's about to go to hell, and then what happens after everything goes to hell. I like the spectacle of it. You know, it's one of the reasons why we go to the movies, to see giant things happen on a giant screen that are scary and almost realistic, or as realistic as possible, and be able to live through it. And then there's those of us who like to imagine about whether or not we're going to be able to survive or not. I, for one, am going to tell you that if something like this, like any of these world-ending things happen, I'm going to lay down in the middle of the street because I'm not going to bother trying to fight for it.
Seriously, you're not going to even make the effort?
I might change my mind in the moment, but right now, like zombie apocalypse, asteroid coming, giant earthquake swallows, the water's coming for me, laying down in the street because I'm just going to end up dying tired.
Jesus, man. All right. So that leads me to another question before we get to the movie battle royale of it all, right? Is it wrong?
Wait, in anticipation for the question.
Yeah, right. And get ready. Here it comes. Is it wrong?
Build up.
To cheer on destruction that sometimes does actually occur in the really real world.
Like cheer on a hurricane?
I mean,
hurricane. That's what you're saying, like a real situation.
Is it wrong to cheer that on? Now, usually disaster movies they try to avoid real life scenarios because they know that's going to trigger a lot of people. And I get that. But is it wrong for us to go to a theater? Yeah. And, you know, it's on the news all the time anymore because weather patterns are so nuts that people are losing their homes. Things are being destroyed constantly. Tornadoes are everywhere. Hurricanes are everywhere. You know, weather is just all over the place. Not that climate change is a thing. But it's all over the place. Is it wrong to cheer that on when there's that kind of destruction going on in the world? Discuss.
I don't think it's something that we're cheering on. I think it's something that we are witnessing and able to appreciate the witness without the danger.
You don't think people are cheering that stuff on?
I'm sure there's a certain sect of people who are like, yes, God's finger just came out and wiped out all those people in line over there. That's great.
But yeah, there are definitely people who are like, the more wicked, the better, the more outrageous, the better. I don't think it's a bad thing to enjoy that, right? I think the only time I would try to control my enjoyment is if it was depicting a real specific, referencing a specific instance that happened that was catastrophic. You know what I mean? And didn't pay it like a respectful justice. Because if they're making it like a comedy or they're making it super exaggerated, then to me that feels like it's almost like mocking or comical of it. And I don't want to reflect on a real life situation in that way. So if you're going to use a real life situation, I think you'd have to ensure that you're doing it in a respectful manner that's like, here's what happened, or even here's what could have happened if this other thing had happened, but still keeping it in that, again, one of two options where it falls into the reality sector of the disaster movies.
You know what I found funny, since you said comedy, you know, we took a poll in our Facebook group. We do this every time we do a movie battle royale, right? We take a poll in our Facebook group, and the top five are what we all have to pick, at least one from that top five, because then at least we're taking one that's one of the most popular of all time. And then the other one can be our own personal choice of what we think might be the best film of all time. Usually we get both, right? Usually it's a win-win. All the top five are in these final eight, I will tell you that. But I was very, very surprised, not only from us, but also from the listeners, that Airplane, which is arguably one of the greatest comedies of all time, right? We can all agree on that. Airplanes.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fell outside the top 10 and didn't make our top 8. And I was at first I'm looking at that going, I think we're all stupid. Like how is that not in the list? And then I was talking to a friend about it and it really occurred to me that when you think of Airplane, it's not, even though movies like Armageddon and whatnot aren't really the most serious of films, it's because it's not taken it so seriously that it doesn't really feel like a disaster movie, because it doesn't feel like anything tangible or possible. It just feels ridiculous. Is that fair? Or
yeah, and you don't think of Airplane as a disaster movie. You think of it as a comedy.
But aren't you surprised though that it's not a little higher up?
Demographics of the listening audience are changing.
Sure,
it's an older movie.
That, and I do think people are going to instinctually think of it as a comedy and not a disaster movie.
True. Okay. Fair enough. I wanted to point it out. That movie deserves being mentioned. All right, because it is one of the best films of all time. Wherever it lands. I was just kind of surprised it wasn't a little
Roger. That's horrible.
Like that? Fuck you. That was fantastic. All right. Well, speaking of fantastic, if you want excellent, fantastic content, you can go to Patreon, right? Go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Support this show. And you get access to bonus content. We do a show called Bad Movie Night where we take movies that were not loved for some reason by either critics or audiences, and we tell you why we at least like them. Our next movie is actually Twister. So it's part of the conversation, right? And we kind of try to make it a fun topic, as well as sometimes we do bonus episodes to discuss whatever the hell we want to, or listeners' questions is a big part of that. And we'll have a new one of those coming out very soon too. So, you know, if you want to support us, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. It helps keep the lights on and your favorite podcasting. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic, which is the movie Battle Royale for natural disasters. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. Okay, if you've never listened before, you kind of got a little entry there, but I will tell you, this is how it works, right? We've got 8 finalists. Each of us have 2. We're broken into Ho North and Ho South. Troy and I are Ho North because we're more North. And Amanda and John are Ho South because they're more South. Simple as that. We each take our 2.
Technically, I'm a little bit more North.
Damn it, Amanda, we don't have time for this. We just don't have time. We're moving along. Just like a tornado, we're just moving along. We're an F5. We're getting to it. We're going. We break it down. Each 2 get broken down to 1, then they go into semifinals, and then go into finals, and by the end, we're going to know which one is the best natural disaster movie of all time, according to Howes, okay? To the Howes. Did I put enough emphasis on that syllable?
Sure.
Nobody gives a shit.
I was looking to see if Amanda lived actually farther north than we did.
So it's funny that you say that. I was literally doing the exact same thing, and that's why I was muted. It took me too long because I was like, hold on a second. I think Colorado is actually a little bit souther.
Well, it's going to depend on what city in Colorado you're in, because the latitude is very close.
So I am north of Denver, a little bit north of Denver,
okay, but south okay. of Boulder. All right. Okay.
Can the tornado hit this podcast like right now? Just can it please?
What's funny is I think Aaron is just like, come on, let's move on. And John is like, Amanda, your safety.
All right. Well, we're going to start with Ho North. Troy has to sell us his 2 movies. Then we're going to vote on them. He takes that vote. And then when we get into the semifinal rounds, if there are any ties, they are settled by the listener poll we took in Facebook, just to clarify, so anybody knows. That's how these are subtle. Remember the old days, we used to phone a friend and then some rando got to decide the ties? We don't do that anymore. We haven't done that.
I liked that.
Yeah, because you could rig it. Because you know what your friends
are. You were the one who always set it up. Are you saying you rigged everyone?
No, I would never.
That's right. That's why Aaron won so many times. Not the movie. Aaron specifically won.
Aaron does. Nobody wins. The movie wins. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, I was going to say the movie wins, supposedly.
God. To be fair, he very rarely chooses first, too. We normally get to go before him. He normally goes last.
This time, on the round. I picked movie first because one of these is very, very special to me. So, Troy, give us your 2. Sell us your 2, brother. Let's go. I'm excited.
This first movie had a very deep impact on me, but it's Outbreak.
Well played. Well played.
Mataba is only spread through direct human contact. Now, you said that yourself, Sam.
I know what I told you, but now I'm telling you we're facing a new strain.
What?
It spreads like the flu.
Impossible.
Fine. Go to the hospital, check it out yourself. Go without a mask, you'll see more clearly. You got 19 dead, you got hundreds more infected, and it's spreading like a brush fire. You got to isolate the sick, and I mean really isolate them, Billy. We got to get everybody else back into their houses. We got to keep them there.
We're doing that, Sam.
No, we're not doing it because I just drove through 100 people. And if one of them has got it, then 10 of them have got it. And if one of them gets out of Cedar Creek, Billy, then we're in deep fucking shit. And we're already in deep fucking shit. And if you're going to arrest me now.
All right, Sam, all right.
Don't threaten me. Don't threaten my crew. Please, leave us to do our work.
All right, Sam, all right.
A medical disaster film focusing on what happens when a virus could very quickly wipe out humanity as we know it. Sam Daniels and his crew search for the source of Mataba virus outbreak, only discover that the government had a cure for it all along, but not for a version that ended up mutating to become airborne in this medical thriller. So with the knowledge of a plan to bomb the small town of Cedar Creek, Sam races to find a cure. And he found that cure on a budget of only $50 million. And it was a commercial success. It brought in $190 million at the box office with a very star-studded cast that did not ask for a lot of salary. We got Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, Morgan Freeman, Cuba Gooding Jr., Patrick Dempsey, Donald Sutherland, and Kevin Spacey all in this movie. I rewatch this one every 5 years or so and thoroughly enjoy it every time I see it. It's a very easy throw on in the background type of movie. And knowing that we basically just lived through COVID, this movie was very much like on the mind of a lot of people in March of 2020 because it surged to number 4 on Netflix at that time, making it a comeback movie hit. That is Outbreak from 98, somewhere around there. It was back in the 90s. It was good.
Okay.
My second movie
1995 is when it was.
1995.
Close enough.
There you go.
I love close that.
Enough. That's because all the disaster stuff happened right about that time because my other movie.
Wait, do you love it because impact. He just randomly guessed like the year and he was like, I almost had it right there.
I just it's love that he was trying to figure it out in real time and he eventually was just like, it was in the 90s. Who gives a crap? You know?
Exactly. Exactly. The other movie that I picked was Deep Impact.
Where were you today? I've been looking all over for you. Why weren't you at school?
My dad said I didn't have to go. He said there's no point.
I talked to Civil Defense. They said if you and I got married, we'd be family and I could get you in.
Well, what about my parents? They're not your family. I don't want to go without my parents.
You don't have to. I'm the famous Leo Biederman, and I haven't used my fame for anything. But I got them to let your family go, too.
When a kid and his weird astronomy professor discover an asteroid the size of Lower Manhattan hurtling toward Earth, an extinction-level event, or ELE, is triggered, and now friends, family, government, and the news brace for the outcome of the Messiah crew on their way to destroy the asteroid. This one had an $80 million budget and a take of $350 million at the box office. The more real version of the asteroid story that happened in 1998 and the first asteroid story that happened in 1998. This one also had an all-star cast with Robert Duvall, Taya Leone, Elijah Wood, Vanessa Redgrave, Maximilian Schell, and of course, Morgan Freeman. You must love disasters. Mm-hmm. Andy Dufresne was one. Thoroughly enjoyed the way the government handled the crisis in this one. Morgan Freeman should absolutely run for president in real life. Love the personal stories in this movie that happen along the way. And when it does actually hit, because there is no blowing up an asteroid enough that something doesn't eventually land on the Earth. So I love the realism of this particular film. With that, we have to vote on which one of these two is the best disaster movie mm-hmm. of mine. We'll start with Arjan this time around.
Well, thank you very much, Troy. I really appreciate being the first one that gets to go on this.
What is this, a news thing?
What does that
mean? And now to you, Aaron, with the weather.
It's gonna be windy. Gonna be windy. Sorry, John. Please continue.
Chance of meteor showers.
And back to you, John.
Sorry. Oh God. Sorry.
Best Bruce Almighty.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry for the kids on the bicycles going past me as I was giving my news report. I'm just going to cut to the chase.
Alrighty then.
He did the face. Did you hear me? Too. He did the face, the mask face. That was funny. Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway,
did
John,
you hear me at all when I said it?
What'd you say, John?
I said outbreak.
No, I didn't hear you say shit. Were you talking this whole time?
I was talking this whole time.
We weren't listening to you at all. We were having our own clearly little not, thing about.
Because I heard him say outbreak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, John.
You matter. Troy, it's your fault.
Amanda.
Why was it so quiet? My vote is for Deep Impact. Well done, sir. That's well funny. Done.
Why Deep Impact? I'm curious.
I think I'm going to be honest with you. I just enjoyed it more.
Okay.
I just had a better time with it.
No deep thoughts there. Okay.
Keep in mind. I watched Deep Impact a long time ago. I watched Outbreak more recently. And so it doesn't have probably the same effect as if I would have watched Outbreak a long time ago.
Didn't we do like a commentary track for Outbreak for Patreon?
I think so.
We sure did.
I think, yes, we did.
Oh, I got to go back and re-listen to that.
That was classic.
Yeah, I got to go back. It's on Patreon. If anyone wants to listen. Or maybe it's on the feed. I don't even remember. Maybe we did it on the feed. I don't remember. But anyway, is it my turn?
Google The Hollywood Outsider and Outbreak. There you go.
Yeah. So here's what I will say. I am a big fan of Outbreak. I think that is a fantastic film all the way across the board. These guys are keeping their answers a little too simple and not explaining it. Like, I don't know. Like, it's like they've never done this before. I don't know what the hell's going on, but.
Wait a minute. Let's back this fucking train up.
He
a
did
little
try.
Bit. He did try. Totally just kept tried, but everyone stepped on me.
Would you like to elaborate?
No, because I'm over it now.
Okay. Well, it's a fantastic movie. Kevin Spacey's in it. He crushes it always. Dustin Hoffman gives such a great performance in this film. And even though I still think it's really stupid how he just, you know, takes his shit off at the end because he's not really sure that this is going to work. Maybe make sure it works before you take your suit off, but whatever. And the cure is extremely fast. That's probably the fastest any cure has ever been made. I still thought this was a fantastic film, and it was terrifying when COVID hit. So it kind of has a shelf life of forever, I would say. A Deep Impact? It was the year of the two asteroid movies, right? Deep Impact and another one that shall remain nameless for the time being. And I just never really liked it. And I apologize because I know a lot of people love it. I could never get into it. And maybe it's because I like the other one better. Maybe that's why. But I don't dislike it. It's just not a movie that really spoke to me. That's how I would phrase it. And maybe it's because I saw the other one first. So Outbreak.
And I get it. It's like when Ants and Bug's Life came out the same year and people were on one side or the other.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Yeah. Well, okay. Outbreak moves forward.
All right. Now we go on to my picks. So my first movie is one of the rare films I have ever given a perfect rating to. And even when I think I've seen it enough and my emotions have been put through the ringer, well, my heart will go on to Titanic. You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm pretty proud of that.
Water, 14 feet above the keel in 10 minutes, in the 4P, in all three holds, and in boiler room 6.
That's right, sir.
When can we get underway, damn it?
That's 5 compartments. She can stay afloat with the first 4 compartments breached, but not 5. Not 5. As she goes down by the head, the water will spill over the tops of the bulkheads at E deck. From one to the next, back and back. There's no stopping it.
The pumps, if we open the
doors... The pumps buy you time, but minutes only. From this moment, no matter what we do, Titanic will founder.
But this ship can't sink.
She's made of iron, sir. I assure you, she can.
$2.264 billion. one of the top films in history, even with inflation, Troy, even with inflation. 14 Oscar nominations, 11 wins, tied with Ben-Hur and Return of the King. And as a film, James Cameron's tale already has proven its mettle, right? But a lot of films have swept awards and made billions. So why is this one so special? Well, for one, it remembers that any great disaster movie has to have characters we care about. Has to. It's a must. Enter Jack and Rose. And also the captain, the band, anyone who isn't Billy Zane. We come to really pray for their well-being. And maybe Rose's mom. She's kind of a suck. It's a film that highlights the difference in classes. It tells a story that speaks to anyone and everyone. It's about so many things all at once. We all want to feel what Jack and Rose felt. We all want to survive if we're faced with tragedy. We all have no idea what we would do when faced with one of the greatest tragedies in world history. And it's just a recapturing of events and reinvention of events where 2,240 people died on this ship that was supposedly destined for greatness, and instead it was destined for infamy. It's a story we also all knew going in. Yet, James Cameron, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Kate Winslet made this feel like a brand new story. And the painstaking detail that Cameron went through to make us feel every ounce of horror as that ship went down in almost exactly real time is something that has never, ever been matched, in my opinion. It also has a very special place in my heart for very personal reasons. I don't know if you guys care about that, but definitely has a very special place in my heart for very personal reasons. And it deserves...
Well, we know, but you can tell the people who don't maybe know.
Okay. I'll tell you the Reader's Digest version. Okay. So here's the deal.
Give us your other one first so that you're not like swaying our vote here, you know. You're like stacking the deck.
No.
Like giving us a sappy love story.
But you want to hear the story after I sell the two movies? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Troy, right. We already know the deck is already stacked.
The audience doesn't know, though.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I'll come back. It's just for their anticipation, I guess.
Yes. Okay. Let's exactly. Stamp it up. All right. But it also deserves to be here simply because it is the greatest disaster film of all time. And I still love that song. I don't care what anyone says. My next film focuses on a much less real tragedy, but it could happen. Probably. If it was a Western, this would be Tombstone, not Wyatt Earp. If you know, you know. It's a film about the greatest deep core driller in the wide world, Harry Stamper, and it's called Armageddon.
All right, let's get the tools unpacked and fire up the armadillo.
I'm not getting a damn thing on the inertial nav system.
I know where we are.
Please step away. Radio signal's dead.
I'm flipping the backup generator. Radio signal's gonna be cut in half till we get main power back.
Segment 202, lateral grid 9, site 15H32, give or take a few yards. Captain America here blew the landing by 26 miles.
How the hell do you know that?
Because I'm a genius.
After learning that an asteroid the size of Texas is going to destroy the planet, NASA decides to rally together some deep core blue collar drillers to save the planet. Led by Bruce Willis, Harry Stamper is joined by his wannabe son-in-law AJ, Ben Affleck, and his wild crew of roughnecks. Also, an absolutely heart-crushing father-daughter relationship with Harry and his daughter Grace, who's played by Liv Tyler, which leads to back-to-back man tears as Harry Stamper puts the yippee-ki-yay into this motherfucker and saves the whole goddamn planet himself. Michael Bay directed, and the film was a monster success, turning out $554 million worldwide, boasted an all-star cast, including Billy Bob Thornton, Owen Wilson, Steve Buscemi, William Fichtner, and Michael Clark Duncan. This is the kind of awesome Deep Impact wishes it could be. And always look out for the Russian space station. Those are my two picks. Armageddon and Titanic. What say you, Amanda?
I actually like both of these movies, but I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the absolute significance and lasting impact of Titanic. I feel like you hear more references, younger and different generations who have seen the movie and know about it versus Armageddon that I think had such an impact for a shorter amount of time. And that's not to say that neither movie is one is better than the other. I have my preference of which I believe is better, and that's Titanic. But I also, I think that's just, it was, there was more story and heart in Titanic. And that, I think, has a longer lasting impact. Plus, now you get to have the jokes around. Surely she could have let him on the board.
Oh, that was the door. And yeah, there was plenty of room. Sorry. Plenty of room. So yours is Titanic? Yeah.
Mine is Titanic.
All right. John.
Mine's going to end up being Armageddon, because I can't count how many times I've seen Armageddon. I can still count how many times I've seen Titanic. It's a great movie. It's a beautiful film to watch, and it's something that you really have to pace yourself. So it goes to me, it's a kind of movie that goes in the category of like all these extended versions of Lord of the Rings. I don't need to see it again. But Armageddon, I'll sit down and watch over and over again.
He just threw shade at Lord of the Rings, Troy. Did you hear that? It was very subtle. The extended edition of Lord of the Rings. He just threw a little shade.
I take my compliment back from earlier. The Ents will remember.
I said what I said.
The Ents will remember.
To you, Troy. You get to decide.
Oh, Titanic, hands down. This is the way that Cameron just does this painstakingly by the second as the ship it hits the berg till it goes underwater finally. Even though there's plenty of room on that door, you know, we still would be happily to watch Jack float into the ocean down to the depths, you know, and then eventually the heart of the ocean is down there with him because it was Rose's heart after all.
Still feel really bad for Bill Paxton though. Like, she had it the whole time. That sucks.
That is some bullshit.
It is. That's been 84 years.
Ask better questions. He needs to ask better questions.
It's true. Yeah. He never did say, hey, do you have that heart necklace on you?
Yeah.
Hey, at least he's going to find it down there. You know, maybe he'll find it down there. She's created the best Easter egg game for him.
Sure.
James Cameron comes back in after Avatar 4 and they realize that Pandora is actually Earth and the heart of the ocean is sitting there at the bottom at the end of Avatar 4.
And somehow it landed on top of the Titanic. Like, how the hell did that chick throw it on there? Man, this sucks. I gave her a ride.
How does it look like nothing happened to it at all over these years?
Okay. So what are we doing? We moving on? Titanic is moving on.
Yeah, I think Titanic won on that one.
Yep. All right. Titanic and Outbreak. Now we're moving on. I'll come back to my story at the end of this so I don't taint the votes, apparently. So now we go to Ho South. John, what do you got?
All right. So my very first movie we're going to talk about is The Day After Tomorrow.
Are you saying that these things are interconnected?
We have to consider the possibility.
The only force strong enough to affect global weather is the sun.
What's NASA have to say?
We've already checked. Solar output is normal.
What about the North Atlantic Current?
What about it?
I got a call last night from Professor Rapson at the Hedlund Center. He thinks the current has changed.
Come on, Jack. How could that be?
The current depends upon a delicate balance of salt and fresh water.
We all know that.
Yes, but no one has taken into account how much fresh water has been dumped into the ocean because of melting polar ice. I think we've hit a critical desalinization point.
The Day After Tomorrow is one of the best disaster movies out there, cranking up the drama and destruction to epic proportions. Imagine a sudden massive climate catastrophe that throws the world into chaos. A hero, Jack Hall, played by the incomparable Dennis Quaid, races against time to save his son, Sam, the amazing Jake Gyllenhaal, from an icy doom in New York City. This movie doesn't just bring the thunder, it brings snow, hail, and freezing temperatures that will leave you shivering, even if it is July. And that might be why I like watching this movie so much. What sets that Day After Tomorrow apart is its relentless action, jaw-dropping special effects, and the film plunges you into a whirlwind of extreme weather events that are both thrilling and terrifying, making you appreciate the power of Mother Nature. But it's not just about the spectacle. It's also about the bonds of family and the lengths we'll go to protect our loved ones. Amidst the chaos, there are touching moments of heroism and sacrifice that tug at the heartstrings. The film's powerful depiction of the world turned upside down by climate change not a real thing, resonates deeply, making you reflect on the potential real-world implications of environmental neglect. It's the perfect blend of heart-pounding excitement and emotional depth, making it a standout in the disaster movie genre. That was my first movie.
I liked your line about not only does it bring the thunder, it brings the snow and the rain. I actually liked that. I giggled.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, sometimes I do good stuff. My second movie is Take Shelter.
You think I'm crazy? Huh? Is that what he told you? Well, listen up! There is a storm coming! Like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
Take Shelter isn't your typical disaster movie filled with explosions or heroic wet rescues. Oh no, this gem zeroes in on the mental toll of seeing a disaster coming and the fallout within one's family during the whole thing. Imagine trying to convince your family that the end is near and they think that you're just losing it. Poor Curtis, played by the intense Michael Shannon, grapples with the terrifying visions of an apocalypse, making you wonder if he's a modern day prophet or just needs a really long vacation. I vote vacation. His wife Samantha, the ever talented Jessica Chastain, tries to keep it together while wondering if she should stock up on canned beans, potatoes, or just call a psychiatrist. What sets this movie apart is its focus on the psychological hurricane brewing in Curtis's mind rather than the actual storm. The film slowly builds suspense like a pot of water about to boil over, making you squirm in your seat in the best way possible. It's not just about the impending doom. It's about the strain these premonitions place on the family ties. Trust, sanity, all that stuff. Director Jeff Nichols crafts an atmosphere that is so thick with dread that you could cut it with a knife. The film's portrayal of Curtis's unraveling sanity and the impact on his loved ones is both gripping and heart-wrenching, making you question the nature of fear and the fine line between caution and paranoia. And that's why it is my second pick. I am going to go around the room to obviously hear all about how because everyone's already dropped their notes about how this movie is not a disaster movie, but I'm still stand by it. I'm going to start with Amanda.
Well, I'm not here to debate whether it's a disaster movie or not. I'll leave that for Troy and Aaron because I know they're going to do super great at it. I'm just going to say I really like The Day After Tomorrow. That to me is the crushing epitome of everything that I would personally fear. So when I think of like a very terrifying but very realistic disaster movie, I do think about this. So The Day After Tomorrow is my pick, and I'll let these two fools go ahead and share to you why they don't feel it's a disaster movie. Either way, it's not. It just shouldn't be here.
Ooh.
Okay. Aaron. Ooh.
Should take shelter from that slap. Look, I, how do I say it? This is a very good film. So bringing awareness to a little indie film, I think is always a plus, right? So if you've never seen Take Shelter, I definitely recommend it, especially if you have any kind of love for psychology, psychosis, just people that are going through something. I mean, a lot of that movie is trying to decipher, is he crazy? Is he logical? You know, is this a real thing or is this all in his head? And everybody else is questioning him the whole time, right? So you get your answer in the last few minutes, if I remember right. I mean, it's been a little bit since I saw it. But I guess what I would say is, in my mind, it does qualify as a disaster movie because it's about an impending disaster, but it's just not really one that I would put in my top 10 or 20, honestly. And it's nothing against you, John. I mean, if you love the film, you love the film. And obviously it's a personal story for you. I get
and
it.
I do. I do love the film.
Totally get it. It's just, when I think disaster movies, I want to see some disasters. you don't really see any disasters in this. It's
I agree. I typically want to see the disaster when it comes to disaster movies. That's one of the reasons why I picked this, because I do love it very much. And the disaster you're seeing is just this guy's life falling apart.
Yeah.
And
but it's about a potential disaster in his head that he thinks is coming. That is, you know, maybe or maybe not. Do I think it belongs in this particular section? No, I don't. But it's also your pick. That's what a pick's about. As long as you can sell it, you just sold it. It just isn't my vote. It's going up against Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid almost always wins, my friend. So in this case, he does again. Day After Tomorrow moves on.
All right.
Yeah, there's a reason why Take Shelter doesn't go forward. And it's because he was DQ'd by Dennis Quaid. Because Take Shelter is DQ'd because it is not a disaster movie. In fact, in the way you sold this movie, both to us previously and just now to the audience, was that you sold it exactly what it is. It is a psychological suspense thriller, not a disaster movie. And because of that, Day After Tomorrow is clearly going forward. However, I agree with Aaron. It is a freaking fantastic film. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. I just watched it for the first time yesterday because I wanted to make sure I could very clearly state that it is not a disaster film. But when you find out, when they're coming out of the storm shelter, when there is an actual tornado that shows up, when they're waiting to open up the door and how they have to deal with, you know, does she open it? Does he open it? Like, that moment is just, you sit on the edge of your seat the entire time, just wondering what's going to happen. So yeah, it is a fantastic picture. It is very well done. Very, you know, low budget looking feeling, but yet at the same time, just really packs an emotional turmoil. There's one scene that actually really hit home with me from a recent experience I had, just dealing with depression and stuff. And it's like, yeah, this is a really great movie, but it is not in any way, shape or form a disaster movie.
All right. Well, we're going to agree to disagree, but I appreciate your point of view.
Hey, see, that was almost You're constructive. Welcome. Amanda, you should be proud of all of us. I'm just saying, we handle that.
I am.
Pretty respectful.
Feels like I'm on a business meeting. I'm going to start drinking here.
I'm not wearing pants. Sorry.
Me either.
Oh, that took a turn. All right. So, Amanda, speaking of you and your pantsless self, what are your two movies? Because The Day After Tomorrow has moved on.
Okay. My first movie is Twister.
Joe, Bill, you all right? Hey, can you guys hear me? You okay?
We're okay.
Joe, Bill, did you see that explosion?
We saw it.
Monster's still moving northeast on 80. Copy?
This is it. Last one.
Last time.
During the approach of the most powerful storm in decades, university professor Dr. Joe Harding, Helen Hunt, and an underfunded team of students prepare the prototype for Dorothy, a groundbreaking tornado data gathering device conceived by her estranged husband, Bill, played by Bill Paxton. When Harding tells Bill that Dorothy is ready for testing and that their privately funded rival, Dr. Jonas Miller, played by Carrie Elwes? Elwes?
Yeah.
However you say his name. Elwes. Has stolen the idea and built his own. So Bill rejoins the team for one last mission. Now, the second one is out. 25 years after this movie originally came out, it gets a sequel, which I think speaks volumes to the impact that it has years and years later, literally decades later. It's still revered as one of the best disaster movies of all time. It's funny. It's romantic. It's terrifying. There's cows flying in the air and it's hilarious, but you're also in a state of panic for them. And it's also really interesting because, like, the science nerd in you is like, wait, what? How is this going to happen? They're doing something very inventive and cool. How exciting. And it's also, it feels, even though there are moments where it's like, this is, seems a little outrageous, it's all still very plausible. And that's why it's so fun to watch, because of all those reasons. People have enjoyed this movie and have also been terrified of tornadoes because of this movie, to the same degree, I would argue, that Jaws has had on people swimming in water.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So that is why it is my first choice. My second is a little old film called Everest.
You have kids?
Yeah, I have kids, but I thought I told you that there's an elementary school back home. And I've been going and talking to the kids there, and they actually helped me raise some of the money to come and gave me a flag to plant on the summit. And so I was thinking maybe it's they see a regular guy can, you know, follow impossible dreams. Maybe they'll be inspired to do the same, I guess. I'm climbing Mount Everest because I can. Because to be able to climb that high and see that kind of beauty that nobody ever sees, it'd be a crime not to.
On the morning of May 10th, 1996, climbers, played by Jason Clark and Josh Brolin, from two expeditions start their final ascent toward the summit of Mount Everest, the highest point on Earth. With little warning, a violent storm strikes the mountain, engulfing the adventurers in one of the fiercest blizzards ever encountered by man. Challenged by the harshest conditions imaginable, the teams must endure blistering winds and freezing temperatures in an epic battle to survive against nearly impossible odds. Truly is a Tom Cruise level mission. I don't even know if Tom Cruise could survive this one. You know what I mean? The highest point on Earth. Think about not just the weather that they're going to be going through and the climate, but the pure terror of knowing that you are going that far into the sky and you have nothing. If you die up there, or you get injured, or something happens to you, nobody can come and get you. Nobody can save you. You're all alone, because people don't go up there for a very good reason. We have an incredibly stacked cast in Everest. I felt the anxiety and terror for them, because you are taken on an individual journey. It doesn't feel like it's a disaster that's so big, but it can literally, nobody else is there because nobody else is willing to be there. That's how dangerous it is. Sure. And when you put that into perspective, it's like, that is terrifying. And they really do show you the grueling journey of getting to the top of Mount Everest. And I think the most significant part of it is this is a real story. So this actually happened. And that is even more terrifying. And that's, to me, it encapsulates the gravity of somebody trying to go to the top of Mount Everest, and the extreme hazards, I guess, that you're exposed to in every capacity that people are just never put in the position to experience to this degree. So to me, that makes it a pretty incredible disaster movie. It was so much fun. It was very well received. The Jilly Hall, he does stuff, you know?
Jilly Hall.
So my two picks, we've got Twister and we've got Everest. I'm going to start with Troy.
My pick will be Twister, because Van Halen, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and the Extreme. Plus, who else can tie yourself to a lead pipe with a belt and survive in a dramatic fashion? I mean, that is just hands down the most amazing thing. Plus, it's the first time I've ever seen the inside of a tornado shot so well. I mean, it's just a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. And because Everest also, to me, is not a disaster movie. Yes, it's a tragedy. Yes, it's almost like a biopic about the team that went up there in 1996. But freak storms happen all the time up there, right? It's not really a disastrous storm like you would see in, say, The Day After Tomorrow. So from that, I mean, the only disaster that's really happening in Everest is the hubris of the men that are trying to climb this mountain and get up there and not come back down like they're supposed to, and follow their own rules and their own, marriage responses that they get from their people. So, I mean, I could not classify Everest, to me, as a disaster movie. It's a great retelling of the story, much like Alive was, for example. But yeah, disaster movie, Everest is not, in my head.
So while you were saying all of that, I was like, wow, he's actually making a really good point. And then I was going to say, and I'm shooting myself in the foot when I say this, does Twister even count then? Because when you think about the level of impact, it's also on a very marginal scale. It's a single town that is experiencing a disaster, just like it's a single like segment of a team, like an entire team that's experiencing it with Mount Everest. So I feel like they're almost on the same level, that they don't have this hierarching worldwide or countrywide level impact. It's one isolated area.
Yeah, but they haven't seen a lot of F5 tornadoes. F5 is a major killer.
Okay.
All right. Aaron?
Well, I do not
plus
agree
had,
with...
Plus, they had water sisters.
Two I do not agree with Troy on this one. Everest is definitely a natural disaster movie. It's literally about one of the most real disasters that ever happened in the world. It's really a storm that really killed multiple people. So it definitely counts. It's a great movie. I just don't think it compares with Twister. I can love a movie and just say, you know, it's great. It's not this great. And Twister's one of those where it's just like peak cinema. And I mean, I literally, that was my drive-in movie over the July 4th holiday, where I camp out in my backyard and have friends over and we project onto the fence and watch a movie. We picked Twister this year because of obviously the sequel. And man, it holds up. It really, really does hold up. I still say maybe Bill Paxton could have been cast better, but he still works well in this movie. And that team is just a wonderful collection of characters that just really mesh together. They have that wonderful dinner at Meg's house and all that. Like that's just great cinema. And the effects are so old, you would think it would look dated, and it doesn't. It still holds up. So Twister is definitely it for me. But Everest, great pick.
All right. Not that it matters, John. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no one cares, but
especially not me.
Yeah, especially not you. I'm going to actually side with Troy and say that Everest isn't so much a disaster film, more so it's a bunch of people who decided to pay $60,000 to go someplace they don't belong.
This is why it bothers you guys, right? Because it's rich guys that are getting themselves killed. It's really your own fault.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily bother me. I think it's a fantastic film. It doesn't necessarily bother me. I just don't know if it fits in the genre. But so with that being said, Twister's all the way. Now, I will argue that Twister is dated and does need an update for some of the special effects. I watched it just today just to refresh myself with it. And it is a little tough, but I still love it.
Man, I disagree with you. I think it holds up great. Teach their own. But Twister moves on. All right.
It lives.
We move to the semifinals. Ho North, the semifinal. It is between Outbreak and Titanic. And we're going to
what a competition.
We're going to let the South go first. Amanda.
Yeah, this literally isn't even a question for me. So Titanic is the answer. It's the only correct answer here.
All right.
You'd be wrong, but sure. You're entitled to your opinion.
Whatever, Troy.
John.
I'm going to have to upset the apple cart here. It's Outbreak to me.
Better than Titanic. Okay. It's your vote.
Yeah.
It's your vote.
Yeah, it's my vote.
Troy?
Yeah, Outbreak is definitely the winner between Outbreak and Titanic specifically. Titanic is a great disaster film, but Outbreak is something we actually lived. Titanic is something we just read about.
I'm so glad you guys don't pick Oscars. I go with Titanic. So because of that, that's a tie. We have to go to the poll to see which one wins. And according to the poll, Titanic beats Outbreak. So it moves on.
Of course it does.
As it should.
Good choice, Aaron. Oof. Good job. Go team.
Good job, people in our Facebook group, because you you saved what could have been a horrible tragedy of justice right there. All right. Now we go to Ho South. And those two is The Day After Tomorrow versus Twister. Oh, that's an interesting dilemma. And this is where the North gets to go first. So, Troy, what do you say between those two?
I mean, I love the extreme. I love Van Halen. I love tornadoes. I actually ran away from an actual tornado, like literally ran away from a tornado in Wisconsin one time. Mm. And I saw one actually come by my house here in Illinois just recently. But I think disaster movies, though, Day After Tomorrow is just that epic scale and thing that I think we fear the most. And having actually been outside during one of the polar vortexes recently where I almost died because I was walking my dog and I hit my head and actually passed out in the snow and didn't know if anybody was going to find me. I would have to say Day After Tomorrow between those two.
All right. Well, I get to pick next for this one, and mine is Twister. I love the Quaid, but it's nothing compared to Twister, man. I freaking love that movie. It still holds up great. John.
I'm going to have to go with Day After Tomorrow. There's something about that movie that I love. I like sitting down and just being able to zero in on it. I like the turmoil in it and the family love. I do love Twister. Philip Seymour Hoffman, that was the first time I recognized him. That was the first time I'm like, that's somebody who's going to be great. And I do love Twister, but I'm going to go Day After Tomorrow.
And Amanda.
Oh, this is a fun position to be in.
I've got the poll ready. So if it ends up being a tie, I've got the poll ready.
You don't need that.
Oh.
I like Twister. I love Twister a lot. It's a great and epic movie. But again, to like what Troy said, when I think of an epic disaster movie, I do think about The Day After Tomorrow. And it is the combination of every type of storm and degree of disaster of all these other movies between the hurricanes and everything and flooding. And it's like, that is the greatest disaster because of the scale that it is. So almost identical to what Troy said. I have to go The Day After Tomorrow.
Well, that is a turn. I did not expect this. I did not expect it. Okay. So my vote was...
How are you feeling right now, Aaron?
I'm feeling like I'm going to lose.
Sounded like the disaster artist right there.
Oh, boy. That was.
I did not.
I feel like he sounded like he got punched in the gut.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I mean, it's not even close for me. I totally would pick Twister here. And, well, actually, I already did. That's just wild to me. 3-1. I didn't expect it. I don't know what to say. Okay. So we move on to the final round. And the final round is Titanic versus The Day After Tomorrow. Again, I have the poll handy. And I will say this poll is very, very, very close. Very, very, very close. And I can't tell you how close because it's not going to be fair to anyone. So I don't want to influence anything, but let's go. So The Day After Tomorrow versus Titanic. John.
I'm going to go Day After Tomorrow because it's more of a disaster movie, whereas Titanic is more of a period piece to me.
What? Okay.
Yeah, you heard me.
I heard you.
You heard me?
Yeah. All right. Troy.
I kind of actually agree exactly with what John said. And I think disaster movie, popcorn flick, budget, you know, big budget, you know, weird, crazy shit happening. Like Day After Tomorrow hits all those buttons. Titanic is a great film. It is one of probably the best films of all time. In the way it's produced, shot, distributed, the whole thing. But I don't sit down thinking I'm watching Titanic, the disaster movie. I sit down watching Titanic, the love story.
Okay.
So yeah, Day After Tomorrow for this particular battle royale.
Well, I'm once again going with Titanic, and I'm once again going to leave it to Amanda to maybe throw a curveball here. Who knows? But Titanic. So it's either a tie or a win. You choose.
It's so crazy to me to ever say that I agree with Troy on something. But when he said that it is one of the best movies ever made, Titanic, and how it was produced and shot, you were right in that part, sir, because Titanic is one of the best films of all time. And that was an absolute disaster and tragedy that occurred. And when I think of disaster, you know, we're talking about natural disasters, an iceberg hitting this moving object. It was a disaster in the ocean. And I don't know if it still qualifies.
Boat, the iceberg did not hit the boat. The boat hit the iceberg.
Either way, it hit a natural object and then the disaster happened. It is literally a natural disaster.
They had flooding. I think what I'm getting at is I think because it's on water, sometimes it's more isolated again to like a smaller degree of the amount of people impacted. But that is the equivalent of a hurricane flooding and murdering people in the country just because they're attached to a country versus this is an isolated object
floating moving through the ocean.
Yeah, floating country. And I think we've all experienced a cruise ship. It really does feel like a little neighborhood thing. It's weird. It's very weird. And I think about that when I've gone on cruises. I think about the Titanic and how absolutely devastating, and like the rescue missions that would have to happen nowadays and the widespread coverage that would occur. And we had something very similar happen and not too long ago. And that's what I think about with Titanic, is its insane impact that it brought to light this disaster and tragedy that occurred in real life, but also gave it love.
All right. Well, that means we have a tie. So we go to the poll. Okay. And if you guys want, you can see the number. I don't know if you can see it. I'm just making sure these guys see it so that they know. It is literally by one vote. It is one vote that decided the winner on this one. One vote decides
Which
the winner.
Was Aaron's vote. So he technically voted twice.
Nope, it's not my vote. The winner is Titanic by one vote. So it was very close. So it feels like
that's crazy.
These were fair two finalists, I guess. Although I will say Twister whomped everything else. So there's probably some people cursing at us right now. Like, it whomped it. But I also think you've got some recency bias because everybody's excited for the sequel. Maybe that too. But yeah, so what is the greatest natural disaster movie of all time? It is Titanic. Get off that door, bitch. God.
Such hostility for Rose.
She should have shared.
Yeah, no kidding.
Really, she should have shared. So the listener, top 10, okay? And I'll go from number one down. Number one is Twister, okay? I mean, like I said, by a large margin. Number two was Armageddon, huh? Could have taken over Day After Tomorrow on that one. Number three was Titanic. Four was Day After Tomorrow. Then Outbreak. San Andreas. Kind of surprised that one is there. The Poseidon Adventure. Dante's Peak. 2012. That was a good one. And the last one, number 10. Tell me if this one qualifies. 28 Days Later. That's number 10.
It's a bio outbreak, so it would go with Outbreak, yeah.
Yeah, it rides the line.
It does.
He said it justifies mine, so yeah, it counts.
That's kind of true, but that works. So that's an interesting. All right.
2012, San Andreas, Greenland, even Noah. And you pick Take Shelter.
Noah does not. No. Noah's, God, that's a horrible movie. If that would have been here, I would have been.
Take Shelter is a really good movie, man.
It is a great movie. It's not a disaster.
Troy is just bitter about that.
He really is.
No, I appreciate our John mentioning it because it got me to watch it. That's what's important.
Oh, it reminds me. Do you guys want to hear my story or not? Or is it too late?
Yes, we do. Oh, now we can hear. Yeah, now we want your story.
All right.
So since you won, this is why it won with your one vote extra.
No, this isn't why. It, as a movie alone, it won just because of the movie. I've seen the movie multiple times, but here's why it's personal to me. So I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. So I was living with a roommate who is a friend of mine. He actually passed away. So sad story there. But I was infatuated with this very, very pretty girl, right? And Titanic had just come out, or was just coming out. And I was going to ask this pretty girl out. And I told my roommate and alleged friend that I was going to do so. And he was kind of infatuated with her too. So I told him the night before I was going to ask her out that I was going to ask her out. And he asked her out the next day before I got a chance to. Son of a bitch. And then he says, we're going to go see Titanic. Cool, jackass, because she said yes, so whatever. Then pretty girl would only go out on a double date. She would only go out on a double date. So he asked me if I could go on a date with some other girl so we could double date to this movie Titanic. So just think about how horrible that is. The girl you were going to ask out, another guy beat you to it. She said yes. Now he wants you to go with so that she will actually go out with him. But being a good friend, because I was, I went. So I went on another date. Lovely person. Just wasn't for me, the other person. Have to sit through this 3-hour movie about love, watching my roommate, you know, mac on the girl I was trying to ask out. Well, date ended, whatever. They didn't work out. Moved on. So weeks, months, whatever it is, it was probably a couple months. That movie was out for a long time. I finally said, you know what? He broke the bro code. Because for a long time, I wouldn't ask her out because I'm like, oh, that's crossing the lines, right? He asked her out, but it didn't work out. Didn't go anywhere. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to ask pretty girl out. So I asked a couple months later, and I didn't even care what he thought, even though it was against the guy rules, because in my opinion, he broke them first. And she said, yes. Turns out
you had dibs.
Yeah. No, not dibs. But I kind of, yeah, I had dibs. So I took pretty girl to what? Titanic. That's right. We went and saw that again. This time, obviously, she had a much better time because she married me and still lives here.
Aww.
So that's
what story. A sweet little love story.
So you missed out that last part. Like, she still allows you to live there.
Yeah, that's true. She allows me to stay here. Yeah, which is pretty handy. So that's that story.
And for anybody who doesn't know, Erin literally landed the jackpot. She is absolutely beautiful. She's so sweet. She's gentle and caring, but she's also Latina. So she'll take somebody out with her high heel if she has to.
Okay.
And if you can believe it, she actually likes me.
Oh, she likes all of you guys.
We can't.
She likes all of you guys. Yeah. So there you go. Boom. There's my little story. And it fits the Titanic. And by the way, she would totally not share that door with me either. So,
right.
Yeah, the movie works on all factors. All right. Well, that's it. That's our most recent movie, Battle Royale. I think that was a lot of fun. And it was a total surprise. I did not expect The Day After Tomorrow to win. Oh, wait. Titanic won. Never mind.
Titanic won. Almost won.
Apparently, you expected it Day After Tomorrow to win.
I told that story. And I felt like it was so long. I forgot what actually won. Son of a bitch.
Mac, it hit the Quaid.
God. If it would have had Randy Quaid, I would have liked it more. I'm just saying, I want to amp it up a little bit.
He would have flown right up into that polar vortex and said, up yours.
Exactly. Did you ever see the interview? I think it was Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid for something, and Gyllenhaal forgot they were in a movie together. It was this one. He forgot.
That's because he lost all those brain cells when he was up on that mountain in Everest.
Touche. Okay, well, that does it for our natural disaster movie Battle Royale. But before we move on to our reviews of The Beast Within and Twisters, I want to tell you about the second season of the Paramount Plus series Halo, based on the Xbox game franchise, which is now available on DVD, Blu-ray, and limited edition 4K UHD Steelbook. With every episode from season 2, which is a really good show, and nearly 2.5 hours of special features, you can see Master Chief, Cortana, and the other Spartacus of Silver Team take on humanity's greatest threat, the Covenant. So get your DVD, your Blu-ray, your limited edition 4K UHD Steelbook copy, whichever one you prefer, of Halo Season 2 today from Paramount Home Entertainment. It's a blast, so get out there and finish this fight. All right, we are done with our movie Battle Royale. Now we're going to go to some reviews with just Troy and I, because we're the only ones that bothered to see any damn thing. Before we get there, though, I want to mention that appearing recently on CNBC, Academy Award-winning producer and co-founder of Imagine Entertainment, Brian Grazer, confirmed that not only is Glenn Powell going to be taking on a remake of Kurt Russell's Backdraft, which, you know, we'll see what happens with that, but also that Kiefer Sutherland's 24 is getting the movie treatment, though it's not confirmed that Kiefer will actually be involved. I just want to know, as you and I are both 24 fans, what do you think about that? A 24 movie? I mean, that's very long.
Movie would be great because of how things were left with Jack and the helicopter. Like, if they can get Yvonne Stravosky on board and they can get Kiefer on board and they can just do a quick 2-hour movie to finish up whatever that story was, like, that would be epic.
What if they can't bring Kiefer? What if they don't want to bring Kiefer back? What if they want to reboot it with some other
hashtag not my 24?
Exactly. That's how I feel about it too. To me, like, they tried the new version, you know, with another actor, and I thought he was absolutely fine. It didn't fire on the same cylinders as this,
right?
The original.
Now, if they had a movie and it was Chloe,
I do not want to watch a movie with Chloe for the whole movie. I do not.
Well, no, but like Chloe's like running CTU or something.
Oh, sure.
You know, like she's like the boss lady behind the scenes. And then there's like a new up and coming agent, like Glenn Powell, for example.
Oh, God. Why not just put him
in everything these days?
He's in everything. He's blowing the competition away. You know what I'm saying?
I'm down with him in a Backdraft, though. I think he could handle Backdraft.
Oh, I love Backdraft. I think that's a very unappreciated movie.
It's a great movie.
I'm fine with it because there's a lot of different ways you can take a fireman tale. So go for it. Give them their due.
Apparently, you can go left or right in a tornado movie, too.
He can. He can go all over the place. So, other news, or other things we've seen. Cobra Kai, we're going to wait to do like a whole podcast on it so we can do wrap the series up kind of thing, but they're splitting it into three pieces. And the first part one dropped, which was 5 episodes, because there's 15 total. There's going to be 3 of these. I don't really like this release pattern. I think it kind of sucks, but at least you're getting some, and then a little bit more and a little bit more. You've already barreled through part one, so have I. What's your take? I mean, no spoilers, obviously, but are you frustrated that we're stopping right here in the third? I am.
No, I think that we kind of talked about this with like the Star Wars stuff being like 6 episodes. I think this came in at like just over 3 hours.
Mm-hmm, total.
Yeah. Barely. So from that perspective, it's literally like 3 Lord of the Rings movies on what they're doing here. And I kind of like that concept. My problem with it is that I'm used to like 8 to 10 episodes in a season. So the fact that I would only get 3 more episodes, this knowing that there's 15 episodes, there were 2 of these 5 episodes that I felt were just kind of filler. And that was kind of like, you know, like I don't really need this. And then they introduced a really cool story element that I thought was going to be the crux of these 5 episodes to give me something new rather than just because the main thing of season 6 is obviously getting to the Sekai Taikai tournament, which is a lot to say really fast.
Yeah. And I'm going to stay away from it because I don't want to hurt that.
And so, you know, that's where it's going, right? We got to get everybody together. We got to go to the tournament. Sure. We got to beat Cobra Kai at the tournament. So it's like, there's nothing surprising in the season other than who's going to win at the end. So to stretch it into 15 episodes, I think is going to hurt the final season. I think it probably could have been like 2, if it was 10 episodes total, it would have been fine. And they could have split it into 2 parts, maybe do like the season and then finish it with like an epic 2.5-hour movie kind of thing. But, yeah, the 15 seems long right now because there were definitely some plot threads that I just didn't need in a final season.
Yeah, it kind of, I mean, for a cheesy show, it's getting more cheesy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, exactly.
That's the problem. And you've got so many characters now, it's hard for anyone to really get their due. I find that to be a little bit of a problem, but I'm still enjoying the show. Like, I'm still having a good time with it.
But the there's a thing with Mr. Miyagi and some stuff they find, and like that thread could have been, and maybe they'll go back to that in the second part.
They might.
But I felt like that thread with Johnny's thread, like those two could have gone hand in hand on Johnny really embracing the Miyagi-Do way.
I find it fascinating that after this is over, Ralph Macchio is going to go on and he's in another Karate Kid movie. And at this point, good luck finding anybody who really likes likes Daniel LaRusso more than Johnny Lawrence at this point. I think everybody really just prefers Johnny Lawrence. He's more of a modern hero, I guess.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's kind of funny how that's changed. And I wonder if Ralph Macchio secretly is, you know, looks at him.
Especially because, you know, he's a girl dad now. So
he is. Yeah. That's part of the show. It's nothing sexist. Yeah. All right. So we've got 2 movies we want to review. One is coming to theaters July 26th, which is, you know, this Friday. It might be there by the time you're hearing this. And it's one that I saw. It's called The Beast Within.
Yeah. After a series of strange events leads her to a question her family's isolated life on a fortified compound deep in the English wilds, 10-year-old Willow follows her parents. Not that Willow, different Willow. 10-year-old Willow follows her parents on one of their secret late night treks to the heart of the ancient forest. But upon witnessing her father undergo a terrible transformation, she too becomes ensnared by the dark ancestral secret they've tried so desperately to conceal. So just with that, Aaron, I'm like, is this not Brave? Or is it completely different than
it's
Brave?
It's not Brave. No, it's not Brave. No.
So I know you like werewolf movies. Like, what's the setup here? What's the story?
Yeah, and this is definitely a werewolf movie. And the setup is very much everything you've described. It's Willow is this young girl who keeps seeing her dad carted off, you know, once a month, doesn't know where he's going, finally kind of jumps in the truck and finds a way to get there and sees exactly what's going on with her dad. And it's, of course, a werewolf curse, right? Which is something that's been done to death. I will say, this is a film that does it a little bit different. I can't tell you why or how, because that would be kind of a spoiler. But the last act goes in a different direction than I really expected, which was fascinating. The problem, I would say, is the first 2/3 struggle to get you there. It's a little kind of almost abstract. Kit Harington is the star of this. He plays the dad, which is... He honestly I really was impressed with his performance because he's really going outside of what anything we saw of him in Game of Thrones, right? He's really kind of hit or miss. He can snap in an instant. He goes from loving dad to kind of a seemingly crazy dad to maybe he's a monster himself. We don't know. Like, it's all these things kind of tied together and trying to figure out exactly what the ultimate secret might be. And his performance is very, very sound, as well as Willow, who's played by Killian Springall, and her mom is played by Ashley Cummings, who was in Hounds of Love, if you ever saw that one. We did that on Inspired by a True Story. Really, really hard film to watch. And also, by the way, James Cosmo shows up here. He was like in charge of the Night Watch. So there's a lot of Game of Thrones love if you're a fan. But again, the first two thirds are a little abstract and a little kind of hazy. Honestly, I want to say mundane. They kind of drag. But that last third really makes the film worth watching, at least giving it a watch.
Oh, knowing there's other Game of Thrones people here now, I'm wondering if this is what happens, you know, the North curses them and turns them into werewolves.
This is what happens. Yep. This is what happened when he went up north. Yep.
Any other performances stand out?
Just the ones that I mentioned. Kit Harington, for sure. I was reluctant to see what he was going to do here because I wasn't sure. I'm like, if this is just Jon Snow again, I mean, I'm going to be pretty bored. I saw Pompeii, and that was pretty much just Jon Snow. This is very much a completely different performance, and he really, really is reaching for something darker here, which I really liked. I thought he was very, very good.
How about the werewolf effects? Like, does it just look like Jon Snow wearing bearskin, or?
Well, you don't get much of a look at it until the end. I can tell you, definitely a low budget film. You can usually tell with werewolf movies what the budget's going to be. But the way that it's shot, I think they do an admirable job of Alexander Farrell, who directed this, did an admirable job of keeping the camera close enough to where, even though they had limited funds, it looks sharp. So I think the creature design is shot in such a way that it looks terrifying. But I, as a person who's watched every werewolf movie ever made, I think can definitely tell that the budget was a little limited.
You compare it to like Godzilla Minus One. You think it's on par with that, or
no,
a little bit?
No,
no, I do not. Godzilla Minus One's still better.
Yeah, I would say so. Different movie too. Different kind of movie. But really, it's all building up to, it's trying to tell a story of a family in crisis, and it's just a matter of connecting the pieces that the film gives you to get there. Like I said, that last act is great. It's the first two thirds, I think, really struggle.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, if you give it a full price of admission, $10, what are you giving The Beast Within?
I give it $5. I'd love to give it a little bit more, but the first two thirds, I mean, it's an hour where it kind of slogs, and that's a long time for a lot of people. But it's worth the watch just to see the last act and how it plays out.
Sounds good.
All right. Now we can finally move on to Twisters. All right. The new one. The new one. So going in, we talked about Twister a little bit earlier. Did we not? Now, would you say you are a fan, right? Even though it didn't win anything, which I'm still kind of in shock from. But
I mean, should have won best soundtrack for sure.
I'm saying from our movie Battle Royale, it should have won something. I'm very, very surprised. But you are a fan, right, of the original 1996?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You pop it on, you know, once every 3 years or so, for sure. If it's on cable, you'll stop and watch it. It's extreme, man.
Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton were in that one. And I will say, like, in our summer movie preview, we talked about this, and I don't remember who it was. I think it was John, said he had seen evidence that this was linked to the original film, and this Kate in the movie is actually one of their daughters. Not true. There is no connect. There is a very, very
small, very small
throwback. There's like a Easter egg connection to the first film.
Yes.
She is not related in any way. They do a nice little haha, gotcha, to let you know it. She's not related. So this is its own story. I feel like, why wouldn't you just say that out loud? I don't know why you wouldn't. But anyway, then
the haha thing would work. I mean, and it worked.
Sure.
I mean, you're on your edge of your seat waiting to find out what the reveal is going to be. And
sure, I guess. Clever. So this one follows Kate Cooper, played by Daisy Edgar Jones. She's recruited back into the fray by her former partner and friend, Javi, 5 years after a tragedy forces her to rule out storm chasing. He has garnered investors in an effort to identify storms as they hit to study their design, complete with a nod to the first film. Also on his team is the untrusting, Norworthy Scott, who's also next year's Superman, David Corenswet. So you got a peek at Superman. I don't think he did a lot to really impress me that he's going to be a great Superman. Henry Cavill sure looks the part better. But anyway, as they begin their efforts, they cross paths with the storm-riding YouTube sensation that is Tyler Owens, a.k.a. Glenn Powell, chasing further proof he is the movie star of the moment. And he's this untamed cowboy, yet sharply intelligent leader of a gaggle of Gen Z tech iterations, who not only catches videos of tornadoes in action, but he also drives into them, drills his truck into place, and rides them out. Much like your modern TikTokers, like those guys that, you know, they jump from high-rise to high-rise, etc. It's kind of like that, but in tornadoes. And
yeah, like Jackass, but with tornadoes.
Yes, very much. Jackass with tornadoes. And of course, once you bring Kate and Tyler together, lightning isn't the only version of sparks flying. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I see what you did there.
So what did you think of this story?
It's formulaic, very straightforward.
It is.
Yeah. You know, I was traumatized by a tornado. Therefore, I have to destroy tornadoes. It's very right by the numbers compared to the first movie. They do add some interesting things, though, into this one in how Kate and Javi's past lives are now influencing their current lives. And then instead of them, you know, being at odds with each other between her and Tyler, Kate and Tyler's characters, you know, they end up working together towards the middle of the movie. So there are some differences in that way. So it's just enough to keep you on the edge of your seat. But for the most part, you know, they're trying to do something with tornadoes. And of course, you know, that thing obviously is the climax of the movie to see if it works or not.
Yeah. What I found interesting was, you know, in the first film, I think it doesn't get enough credit, the original Twister, with how it kind of created a family of characters. Like, they always felt like family, even though, yeah, you know, Bill Paxton was coming back into the fold. Same thing happens here. You know, Glenn Powell's group definitely seem like family, like they're all together. And you definitely think they're one thing, and then you find out later that maybe they're not exactly what you thought. And, you know, same thing happens on Javi's team, where you think they're one thing and they kind of go another way. Well, I mean, any movie fan probably knows exactly what they are. But anyway, the first film really, really elevated that whole family aspect. I think this film definitely recaptures that in many ways. I felt that as it went on, where I'm like, okay, you know, we don't have a Philip Seymour Hoffman. We don't have a guy that really stands out as the most entertaining member of the group. But we have a group of people that are, every time they pop up, maybe they're doing something. I'm interested.
Maybe his right hand man, the camera guy.
Yeah,
that was always riding shotgun.
Yeah, he's closest. But overall, I really, really loved how they brought the characters together. I was very impressed. We can move into performances. Honestly, I was really impressed with Daisy Edgar Jones. Glenn Powell, we'll come back to him in a second. I have not seen her in anything, so I'm not familiar with her. I didn't see where the Crawdags sing and all that. But I was enamored with her through the entire movie. I thought she captivated the camera. She really, really sold the emotion. She reminded me of Helen Hunt very much. Like, Helen Hunt is a great actress, and you really cared about her play. I really cared about Kate. I really, really did, and where she was going and why she was doing what she was doing and her trauma that she had to deal with. I felt like they did a really good job of showcasing real trauma, like how she can panic and whatnot. What about you?
Yeah, I was the same way. I'm like, I'm watching her on screen and I'm like, is this really the Crawdads lady doing it? I mean, as I'm watching it, I'm like, wow, she feels like a young Meg Ryan in this. You know, she's got some places she could go because she definitely has, you know, enough range in this movie. She deals with some very traumatic stuff, you know, in the first act, and just how she carries herself forward as there's a time jump to 5 years later after that opening act. And it just, I was just enamored just watching her on screen, because she both was like this terrified person, yet resolve in her drive for the things she wants to create. And yet when you get towards the end of the movie, super freaking badass, like take no prisoners kind of face. And it was like, wow, like she's really captivated like a full range of emotions in this character.
She did. Yeah. I was very, very impressed. Anthony Ramos, he plays Javi. I think he does an admirable job with what he has. His is kind of underwritten to some degree. I mean, he has to deal with a personal plight, and I think they cover that pretty well. But it's also pretty predictable in that respect.
Yeah, my problem with Anthony Ramos' performance was that all I saw was Usnavi from In the Heights. Like, I just couldn't see past that character. So I never really got to see the character of Javi. And it felt like in the opening act, he was actually more captivating than he was actually through the rest of the movie. Like, through the rest of the movie, he was just kind of like the secondhand Kate's lapdog kind of thing.
Yeah. I think they could have fleshed him out a little bit. He was only, that opening act was 10 minutes long, maybe. But
yeah,
he had so much more depth, it seemed, in that opening 10 minutes than they give him here. That's all right, though. Glenn Powell, yes, I know he's a movie star. I know he's the next, you know, in the Tom Cruise line, it seems like. I mean, he's adding excitement to the leading man. Of course, I was kind of getting so sick of this freaking trailer. I'm like, Glenn Powell, you're going to be overexposed before this thing even comes out. And he still managed to, I got to say, once I finished the movie, I'm like, all right, he's the real deal. Like, I love Glenn Powell. He's a guy that's really hard to not root for. And he has that innate ability that Tom Cruise has of being able to relate to the audience, which is really, really hard to do. And a lot of actors force it so much. He just has a natural, in my opinion, has a naturally innate ability to make it seem like it's a guy you'd want to have a beer with.
Yeah. And he's been so everywhere that it's almost like you're getting to that point of exhaustion with him, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, when he was with Sydney Sweeney in that movie he was just recently in on Netflix.
Anyone But You.
Anyone But You. I always want to say Anything But You. Anyone But You.
Sir, that was a theatrical release that then went to Netflix. Let's be honest here, all right?
Oh, well, I didn't even know it was in the theaters because I just saw it on Netflix. But that movie only works because Glenn Powell's in it, my opinion.
Glenn Powell
makes that movie watchable.
I agree.
And here, though, it's like I saw a completely different side of Glenn Powell. I saw the person who is like he tells a lot with just looks on his face. He's got the nice attitude of the cowboy wrangler kind of feel, but he had also this like sweet and loving thing. And then the ending sequence is just par on comedy gold, you know, what he does. And it's just like I really, really was like, wow, you know, I fell in love with Glenn Powell. Like, he could do no wrong at this point after this movie.
I remember I think it was South by when I first saw him. There was a movie called Everybody Wants Some, Richard Linklater. And he was absolutely the standout in that movie. And that he hadn't done anything. And that was 7-8 years ago. It was a while ago. And so I just assumed, well, his career is shit. And then, you know, he got Maverick, which I think really kind of elevated him. And then Anybody But You or Anyone But You, that film did very well. Sydney Sweeney has a great social following. And obviously,
for sure,
you know, she's doing a great job of producing and whatnot. I agree with you. I don't think she was nearly as enjoyable in that film as he was. I think he saved that film as far as I'm concerned. And then Hitman, he's great in Hitman, which really surprised me because I just thought the plot sounded stupid. And I actually love that movie. Here he does once again, like I think he finally gets the opportunity to show I can be a movie star. I can be a guy that can carry any stupid plot if you just give me the chance. And that's what I felt like he did here. And even though I think Kate is really the star of this movie, every time Glenn Powell's on in the scene, I feel like it's much more enjoyable. It just like he amplifies everything he's in. That's a good
thing. Like you said, when Glenn and Daisy are together, I mean, it's like movie magic.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it feels like Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan again. It just, something about it just was like, I watch these guys all day.
When they look at each other, oh, love.
Oh, ooh.
It's not like when Bill Paxton looks at Helen Hunt and she's got love and he just looks like he's in pain most
of the
time.
Like Bill Paxton.
Yeah. That was always my one qualm with that movie is like, I like Bill Paxton. It's just,
the love story does not work.
It does not work. Yeah, it does not work. Jamie Gertz, she got out lucky.
It works here.
It does, very much so. But what people really care about are the tornadoes. We talked about it earlier. You know, it's wild that we as audiences love to go watch something that could actually happen in our backyards. But what did you think? I thought obviously the effects have come a long way in almost 30 years.
Yeah, it's 28 years since Twister was out.
Been a minute. But they are phenomenal, I thought. I was in the moment. At all times.
The twin sister tornado, that whole sequence was great. The fire tornado was great. I mean, I thought I saw that in the trailer and I was like, okay, fire tornado, really. But when you actually see how it's done, like scientifically with the CGI and everything, it, like they stick to the science on how it would actually happen. So it's not just for gimmick's sake. It's like it's there for a reason, which is really good.
Yeah, and it's not the first time I've seen a fire. There was a movie, Into the Storm, a few years back. It had a fire tornado. That one was a lot more B-movie, ridiculous. This seemed a lot more reasonable.
Realistic,
yeah. Sure. And one thing I liked about the direction by Lee Isaac Chung, who did Minari, which is a great film if you've never seen it. Oh, my God, it's such a good film. This is a completely different kind of movie. And when he's shooting the tornado sequences, you know, I feel like most directors have a tendency to do one or the other, right? They either do quick cuts to amp up the tension, or they do the wide establishing shots to keep the tension intact. He does a mix, if you notice that. Like, for each tornado sequence, he would go back and forth. Like, there would be some quick cuts. There would be some kind of handheld shots, you know, where the camera's a little bit more jarring. And then there would be the wide establishing shots. He did a very, very smart mix of the three to really just keep you in the moment at all times. So every time you're sick of one angle, you're getting a different angle and a different kind of shot. And I thought that was a really, really smart, well-engineered test of how to really engage the audience in with the film itself.
Yeah, because I felt like because he did that, when he actually has one of those establishing shots, assuming that it would be a closer shot when a human gets hit by a bushel of hay or a, you know, side beam or a water tower or whatever it would end up being. Like every time you see a human get hit by something and then swooped up into the air, I was like, wow, that looks like so realistic and terrifying compared to what it could look like when you're using wire work and whatnot. So
absolutely. And it was, I thought it was so well done. I really did. It was so well done.
Yeah. I mean, you come in and say it's formulaic, it's predictable, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, formulas work for a reason. That's why they're called formulas, right? They stand the test of time because A, B, C, D, E didn't. And it's like, oh, okay, that was a great movie. And it was great. The opening act is just wow. Just wow. My opinion. I like the opening act.
I would completely agree on the opening. And that first 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was, that was super intense. You think you know exactly what's going to happen. Then it's a little different than it is expected. And they even have a nice little kind of throwback to it later in the film, which really, really worked. And there's just some nice playing with audience expectations in this film. You know, kind of like we talked about at the beginning, which I really, really did appreciate, even though it was kind of annoying to a degree. I'm like, all right, it was annoying clever.
The marketing and everything. And you're like, is it connected? Is it not connected? Is it connected? Is it not connected? What's going on?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
But it worked well because then it played into your expectations of just anticipation throughout the entire movie of, is it connected or is it not connected?
And exactly.
It was fun.
And I do like...
And they get the Easter egg out of the way right away in the first act.
They do.
And tell you exactly why they're using it, which is great.
Very, very quickly. I do like the YouTube connection, the Jackass connection. I thought that's very modern day. That is what would happen today. People would film everything. They would try to do something stupid and extreme. But at least he's intelligent enough to know how to do it.
And I think that's really the key point, is that this puts it in modern day. It's like we're in, you know, 2007 to 2024 time frame, right? Everybody's got cell phones. When they're in the Stillwater bullfight, you know, everybody's emergency alert system goes off on their cell phone before they even hear the sirens. So like just doing that modern day stuff, I think really adds a lot to say, hey, like tornadoes are still scary. We have all this tech, but yet we still don't really know where and how it's going to form, move, change, shift. You know, it's still a real thing. And Oklahoma's like literally looking down the barrel every year.
And I did like that the whole concept is we got to figure out how to destroy a tornado. What a great idea if that was possible. You know what I mean? When you get a real destructive EF5 or F5, whichever one they're going with, you get something that's horribly destructive and you can find a way to destroy it. That would change the course of weather in this country and the world. Yeah. Really. It's a good idea. It's a clever idea.
Also, it's probably like one of those like conspiracy theory things, like, oh, they're putting all this stuff in the air in order to disrupt a tornado to save lives, but yet are we also ruining the environment at the same time by doing that?
Oh, you know, we would, of course. So now we've got this movie. It's overperforming, by the way. I told you movie theaters weren't dead. We had a whole episode about it, two episodes back. Listen to that if you want. Movie theaters are not dead. This is overperforming to a great degree, almost doubled what the expectations were on this movie, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Do you want more though? Do you want to see another one with this cast?
Yeah. I mean, where this leaves off at the end of the movie and how great these two were together, I would love to see them work together in the next ones, like hurricanes or something.
Go to a different kind of weather.
Yeah. You could totally, I mean, sadly, you don't want to Fast and the Furious this thing, but you could totally Fast and Furious this thing.
Like they put together this crazy,
it just gets international more
gang that just goes across the globe chasing tornadoes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'd watch that. It's all about family.
Totally.
I would love to see another one. They won me over. I was really expecting this to be okay at best because I didn't think the trailer, well, maybe it's because we saw it. I saw it so many times. It was before every movie since January.
Every movie.
And so I wanted to see it because I love the original Twister, but I'm like, and I love tornado movies for whatever reason, but I would just expected to be disappointed and I absolutely was not. So $10, the full price of admission. What do you give Twister? Zuh.
I was going back and forth because I'm like 6 because it's not like anything new, but at the same time, I had a hell of a fun time with it. So I'm still going to go with a 7.
I'm giving it an 8. Nothing new. I had a great time though. And the effects were phenomenal and I love the cast and I really wanted, like, I was never bored. I even like the soundtrack. There's country music. I'm not a country fan.
The soundtrack is really good again. I mean, that's the thing. Like, the first soundtrack for Twister was amazing. Van Halen rocking it out. The soundtrack, I literally was like, during the movie theater, I was like really quiet. It was like a couple people. There wasn't a full crowd, but I was always like, on my watch, I was like, what's the name of this song?
Yeah, same.
What's the name of this song?
Same. I mean, I didn't do it in the theater because I'm not a savage, but I did it afterward. I looked up the soundtrack just to see. There's a couple country songs. I'm like, country rock, southern rock, whatever. It's very good. Yes.
They're good.
I was impressed.
The touching one, the My Oklahoma or whatever it is.
Yes.
That one's so good.
What a great rendition of that. What a great song. So overall, it's just a great summer movie, man. I mean, it'll probably be crushed next week when Deadpool and Wolverine, but I have a feeling
this is going to
play. Yeah. It's going to play all summer, I think.
Yeah.
This is fun. Good for time. Sure.
It'll be great at a drive-in.
God, wouldn't that be cool? For sure. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining me, Troy, sticking around. Sorry, those bitches couldn't bother.
Hey, you know, it is what it is. They're too busy doing their own things.
Living their best lives. Well, I'm glad that we could do this. And I love the Battle Royale. I'm glad that we had a good episode. Hope you guys enjoyed the whole thing. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.
There's no such thing as a disaster movie for John. Just disaster movies that aren't for you. Because John doesn't know what a disaster movie is.